As an adult amateur violinist, you have a lot of advantages over kids who are learning for the very first time, but there are some disadvantages as well. And I think one of the big ones is it's not really as easy to immerse yourself completely in the world of violin. Young artists who are learning in a conservatory environment or in an after-school program have so many opportunities to play with other musicians, but they're also being taught theory, rehearsal skills, and are performing regularly. Unfortunately, there aren't many structured programs like this for adult learners, so you really need to create your own. And in this week's episode, we're going to do exactly that. I'm first going to take you through what a day in the life of a conservatory student looks like so that we can gather a little bit of inspiration. Then I'll take you through how we can use some of those ideas and then implement them into your own busy life in a way that's realistic to most people's schedules. By the end of this episode, you'll have some ideas of how you can use instruction, practice, theory, listening, performance, teaching, and unstructured playing to design a more comprehensive learning environment for yourself. But first, hello and welcome to Violin Class, the podcast for anyone who's learning the violin as an adult. My name is Julia. I'm a professional violinist and violin teacher, and I'm here to share my tips and advice to hopefully make learning the violin a little bit easier. If you enjoy this podcast, if you've learned a thing or two, I would really appreciate if you could take a minute to leave a rating or a review. Those really help small podcasters like me to reach larger audiences, and it will help new violinists to find this podcast. If you've done that already, a big thank you. Throughout this episode, I will be referencing some outside material, be it books or documentaries or just other things that I think you should check out. So if you would like to have links to those, you should sign up to the Violin Class newsletter at violinclass.co/newsletter. It's free, and I send out an email with each episode with extra little tidbits and things that I've mentioned in the episode. And lastly, if you have any questions, suggestions for future episodes, or lesson inquiries, because I do teach privately, you can reach me at violinclasspod@gmail.com. Without further ado, let's get back into the episode. So back to immersion and all of its benefits. Let's take an example that I think a lot of you guys can relate to, which is how to learn a foreign language. We'll use Spanish as an example. And the best way of learning a language quickly and completely is to move to a country where that language is spoken and immerse yourself completely. So maybe you move to Mexico and you try to make some local friends that will speak to you in Spanish and be patient with you as you learn. You're going to go to the coffee shop and order everything that you want to eat in Spanish. You're going to be watching Spanish TV shows and listening to Spanish radio and just be fully completely surrounded by people who are speaking Spanish all the time. And before you know it, you're going to be living, breathing, dreaming Spanish, and it's going to become a huge part of your life. But what if you want to learn Spanish and you can't just pick up and move to Mexico? Then what do? You have to create as close of an immersive experience as you can at home. So some things that you can do are perhaps change the language of your phone in Spanish. That way you're reading in the language more. You're maybe reading some books only in Spanish and watching TV only in Spanish. Perhaps you'll take some Spanish lessons with a tutor, and that way, at least for maybe an hour a week, you're guaranteed that you're only speaking Spanish. You'll have some instruction and some feedback that way. And then as you get into it, maybe you'll be learning more about Mexican culture, start cooking some Mexican food at home, and start saving up to go take a trip to Mexico so that you can get a taste of everything firsthand as well. And we'll see how all of this relates to violin, because you'll see how you're in a very similar situation as an adult learner, that you're not necessarily in an immersive environment in your everyday life, but there are many things that you can do and that are in your control to get you closer to this immersive experience. And it's going to make learning the instrument so much more enjoyable, a more fun experience of learning, because it's going to feel a lot more interesting Now, let's relate that to learning the violin. What a day of true immersion looks like for me would be life as a conservatory student. So I'm going to walk you through what a typical day would look like. A lot of this will be taken from my own experience as I was studying for my bachelor's degree in violin performance. Then we're going to see what inspiration we can take from this day in creating an immersive environment in your own daily life. So let's say you are an undergraduate studying the violin at a music school or at a conservatory. Generally, in the morning, you're going to have some sort of theory class, an ear training class, or a history class. In college level theory, you're going to be learning a lot of different harmonic progressions, and it's going to train both your ear, but also your understanding of how pieces of classical music are put together. You'd have that a couple, maybe 3 days a week. On the other days, you might have a class in Western classical music history, and this will resemble any other type of history class, maybe like your high school world history class, but everything relates to music. This becomes really important in contextualizing your pieces. So if you're playing something by, let's say, Beethoven, you're going to have a good understanding of what was happening in the music world around that time, before and after, what influences Beethoven had, and that's going to inform the way you're going to perform the piece. It all directly relates to your playing. After that, you might have some sort of sight singing, or it's also called oral skills class sometimes, or maybe a keyboard class. So both of those would fit into your week somehow. Sight singing is where you're going to be practicing how to read music and then sing it directly. And that's going to really improve your ear. You're also going to be doing rhythmic dictations where the teacher is going to tap out a rhythm and you have to figure out how to write it in music notation. That's going to further improve all of your reading skills and make you a better sight reader. And all of this helps you to learn music faster. If you can imagine, if you are playing an orchestra at a professional level, you're learning a new symphony or playing a new symphony every few days. So it's really important to be able to digest a large amount of text with complex rhythm very, very quickly. Lastly, you'll probably have some sort of keyboard skills class. This is not classical piano. It's really just to teach students to have a basic understanding of how the keyboard is laid out and to be able to read different chords and just be able to play basic piano. This is, believe it or not, a really helpful tool when we're learning the violin to have some other instrument where you can reference things. So it's something that is always handy as a violinist. By the late morning, you've probably wrapped up most of your lecture style classes, and you might have a little bit of break around lunchtime. During that break, you are going to head over to the practice room and start warming up for the day. So at a university level, your warm-up's probably around an hour because you've got, as you'll see, a lot of playing ahead of you in the day. So you are playing your scales, you're doing your exercises, and generally just making sure that everything is working well and you're going to be able to pull out your violin and get right into playing when you need it. You've done an hour of warm-up and you're feeling pretty good. You're going to head downstairs to the theater and get seated into your chair for orchestra rehearsal. Orchestra rehearsal is 2 hours. Today you're going to be reading Brahms Symphony No. 2. It's your first time performing this, but for your first rehearsal, you're expected to be able to play it already. So you've been practicing that the last couple of weeks. You've listened to the recordings a whole bunch of times, and you've started to figure out your fingerings and bowings for the piece. Orchestra rehearsal is pretty intensive and it involves a lot of playing, so that's why you want to make sure you were already warmed up for that. By the end of orchestra, you're going to take a quick break, maybe visit with some friends, talk about the pieces that you're playing, and then you're going to head back upstairs for a little bit more personal practice. So in this time, you're going to be preparing for your upcoming lesson that you have in the afternoon. This is your most important part of the week because it's when you're getting direct feedback on your playing. And so you're going to be really focusing on whatever movement of Bach that you're working on. And you're going to take an hour and really do that very, very carefully, making sure that you've got a polished performance to bring to your teacher later that afternoon. Then it's time for your quartet rehearsal. Your quartet meets twice a week and then an additional time for your coaching session with your quartet teacher. You're going to sit down in your practice room with the three other musicians, and today you're going to work on deep intonation in the slow movement of your Mendelssohn quartet. This is really good for your intonation. It's of course something that you're working on your own, but playing with other musicians really adds a whole other dimension to it. So by now you've already played about 5 hours and you're going to take a much needed break. During this time on another day, you have your studio class. So this is when your studio or all of the other students from your private teacher get together and perform whatever they're working on in like a medium stress environment. So you're playing for other violinists here, violinists that are more experienced than you, that play harder music than you. So it is definitely adds a stress factor. A lot of the time you're going to be performing this with piano, and then you're going to give it your best shot and get feedback from the other violinists. They're going to tell you what you should be working on that week, but also what went really well compared to your last performance, things that you have improved. So you're feeling pretty good. Then when you're done, you sit down, listen to the other violinists, and then point out things in their playing as well. This helps you to put into words and explain these different techniques that you yourself are working on, and that's a very valuable skill in improving your own playing. After that, you have the most anticipated hour of the week, which is your lesson time with your teacher. Your teacher, at least in classical music, is going to be the same during all 4 years. It is the instructor with whom you have the deepest relationship with in your university. They'll have started with you when you were fresh out of high school, and you might have actually even met in high school when you were auditioning and starting to see if you guys were a good fit for learning together for the next 4 years. This is the person that's going to help to prepare you for all of your auditions during those years and all of your recitals that you need to pass the program and graduate. This is also the only teacher that you're spending an hour with one-on-one every single week during 4 years. So this person is really going to become a mentor with you and is going to get to know you very well. They're going to know your playing as well as you do, to the point where they can probably tell it's you that's playing among other violinists if they are blindfolded. And they are definitely going to know if you didn't practice that week. They're going to have an overarching vision for your path through violin. So they know what you need to be working on in your first year of studies to get to where you need to be by the end of your fourth year. You've just finished your lesson, and that's the end of your major playing commitments for that day. You always like to take 10 minutes to digest all of your lesson notes because your teacher goes pretty quickly. So you're going to make a quick practice plan for the week, make sure that all of that is going to feel clear to you in the morning. And then you're going to head downstairs back to the practice room, and you're going to meet up with a couple of your friends, a violist and a cellist, to rehearse your trio. So this is an extracurricular ensemble that you guys have created just for fun, where you're playing whatever music you want, and you're hoping that this summer you're going to be able to audition for a festival together and get some instruction. And maybe, who knows, this will even be an ensemble that you can play with professionally when you're done with your studies. This rehearsal is long, but it's fun because you guys can take breaks and chat in between and just have fun playing music together. Then in the evening, just after dinner, your teacher is actually performing with his quartet, and you head back over to the recital hall to watch their performance. It is really inspirational as a student to see your own teacher perform, and you learn a lot that way just by watching how they are mastering the instrument, how they're projecting and doing essentially all the things that they're telling you to do in the lesson. That's the end of your day, and you head back home to get ready for a busy weekend. That weekend, you might have a couple of gigs, maybe a wedding gig, which helps you to make a bit of money on the side. And after that, you're heading to the music school that you work at to teach a few young beginners that are just starting on the violin. You're new at teaching, but you find that just like in studio class, giving feedback to students helps you really focus in on your own fundamentals and helps you to express in words all of these things that you're thinking about all day. This helps to improve your playing because if you can explain something, it means that you really, really understand it. So that is a pretty typical day or maybe week in the life of a conservatory student. As you can see, it is very immersive. They are living, breathing violin. And when they're on their off time, they're likely playing music with some friends in a more relaxed environment, or maybe they are heading to see a concert or playing in one, and it's just all music all the time. How can we distill some of that to make it fit into your daily life? Because let's face it, outside of these 4 years, even professional violinists do not have the luxury of this amount of time to dedicate to studying the instrument. But you'll see there are many things that you can do that will give you a taste of this and is going to go a long way in improving your playing and certainly in making learning more enjoyable. So we can break down everything that a conservatory student is doing throughout the week into different categories. The first is instruction. This is their private lessons with their teacher, but also quartet coaching and orchestra as well. Sometimes you break out into sectionals where a professional orchestral violinist is going to instruct you in some of the etiquette, the bowings, and all the stuff that you need to know to improve as a section reader. Your instruction is not only going to serve as a way to get regular feedback in your playing so that you know what you should be practicing, but also help to motivate and inspire you to continue practicing week in, week out. The second category is practice. This is what you are doing most of the time, as I said, in music school, 3 to 4, maybe 5 hours a day, depending on the time of year, what you have coming up. Generally, you will break this out throughout the day. I would personally do a session in the morning, a bit in the afternoon, and a bit in the evening because otherwise it is just way too much playing on your body. That's why in music school, you have to take such a long time to warm up because otherwise you risk injuring yourself from overplaying. Then we have the category of theory and history, all of the things that give your music context. And these are all skills that you can practice outside of your instrument that is going to make things feel a little bit clearer when you get to your pieces. Over time, you're going to notice that your listening skills, your intonation improves thanks to all of the sight singing that you're doing, the dictations as well. And you're going to have an easier time over your studies following complex harmonies and understanding what makes a piece of music sound the way it does. The fourth category is listening. We'll be right back after this quick break. The Violin Class Podcast is brought to you by my very own private violin studio. If you want to bring your violin playing to the next level, if you find that you're stuck on a certain technique or a piece, you're having trouble making progress, I would love to help you work through whatever challenges that you're working right now on violin. So if you're looking for a violin teacher to help guide you in your progress, or if you're self-teaching and looking for a one-time lesson to check in and work together to make a plan for your violin playing going forward, I would love to work with you. I've been teaching violin online to adult amateurs of all levels for over a decade. So if you are interested, you can reach out to me at violinclasspod@gmail.com. or through my website at violinclass.co/contact. And yes, beginners are always welcome. On that note, let's get right back into the episode. This goes into your preparation work for your practice. In my example, the student had an orchestra rehearsal where they were playing a piece for the first time, but they were expected to know how to play it already. It's a very complex piece of music, and just knowing your own part is not going to cut it. You have to know how everything is put together, which measure the flute solo is at, how long a rest you have, all that kind of stuff. And the best way to really internalize a piece when you haven't had the opportunity to play it yet is to listen to recordings. You're also going to go see as much live music as you can because this is super inspirational and it gives you a chance to performers do things properly, especially the things that you personally are working on. This will also really improve your musicality because you're going to get a more immersive performance experience. It will also help you to understand how to project, how to play in a large space, and just how to control your bow to have a more beautiful tone. The sixth category, which was generally an extracurricular, but we did get a little taste of, was teaching. This is something that was a big part of my week when I was a student, but it really depends on the person. All violinists end up teaching at some point, and in my opinion, it's one of the best things that I could have done for my playing. Again, because if you're able to explain something, you really understand it. I also found it really helpful to work with beginners when I was a student because it would help me to focus in on my technique. I would just try to play those beginner songs as well as I could, and it would just give me a little bit of extra time in the week to focus on my fundamentals. The last category, which is just as important as the other six, is what I call fun or unstructured playing. This is the practicing that you're doing that's not for your lesson or not for any reason in particular. Maybe you are just for fun learning how to play bluegrass fiddle, or you're getting together with your friends and learning a tango piece, something that you're never going to perform to a teacher but is a side project for you. Get together with every week and we would read through three new sonatas for violin and piano. This was a way for us to practice our sight reading, and by the end of the year we had read through most of the violin sonata literature. That was not only super fun, but it really did improve my sight reading in a short amount of time. With this, we see that a budding violinist's day is, of course, full of practicing, but full of so many other things that are going to give them a well-rounded approach to learning and becoming a musician, not just a violinist. And a lot of these things we can do on our own. The intensity of the conservatory, I think I did find enjoyable at 18, but it is certainly miles away from the life that I live now and the life that many of you live as well. Although I'm a violinist by trade and I was lucky to have the opportunity to study in this immersive environment, nowadays I'm a working parent, so time and energy are hard to come by. I am certainly not going out and seeing live music shows on a weeknight. I cannot remember the last time I've done that, and I do not know the next time that I will. I do need to keep my playing in shape for my profession, but I do not have hours and hours to spend messing around in the practice room anymore. And although most of my friends are professional musicians, they are just as busy as I am, and we don't have the time to get together and play music all the time like we used to when we were younger. The reason I'm telling you is, although I make my living as a violinist, my daily life probably looks a lot more like yours than it did to my own when I was studying music when I was younger. So I've had to implement a lot of these strategies as well. So again, we can consider that instruction, practice, theory, listening, performing, teaching, and unstructured playing are the building blocks that are going to make up your musical world. Numbers 1 and 2, instruction and practice, are things that I have covered in depth in many different episodes of this podcast, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it here. You can listen to my episode entitled A Violin Teacher's Advice for Beginners that came out a few weeks ago. For some tips on practicing, you can listen to the episode called A Look Into My Scales Routine. I also have one from way back when about setting up your space for practice, and I cover some practice strategies in there as well. These two elements, instruction and practice, are undoubtedly the most effective tools that you have to learning the instrument. Having regular guidance, and not only that, but accountability from a teacher, is going to do so much for getting you what you need to do to improve your playing and your musicianship. This is not something that's reserved for only those of you that have the time and money for a regular teacher. If you're not in a point in time where you can be taking regular lessons, it is still so valuable to have a check-in every now and then with a teacher. Not every teacher will offer this. I know that it's harder to find in music schools that cater to children, but it's something that I know I'm personally always happy to do. I think that a lot of local teachers would be open to as well. So if it's something that you're looking for and it's not something that's advertised on a teacher's website, I'd still encourage you to reach out and see if they would open to just meeting with you once or maybe on a quarterly basis, just something to check in and help you to make a plan with your practice, because their knowledge is going to save you so much time and energy in figuring out what your next steps are. And they're going to teach you things that you couldn't even begin to guess that you were supposed to be doing. For practice, of course, it goes without saying that in order to improve the instrument, you do need to be practicing regularly on your own. I'm sure you know that already. You certainly do if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time. But since that's so important, I did need to mention it anyways. All right, so those are the first two categories, instruction and practice. What I really wanted to cover more in depth in this episode, though, are the other five: theory, listening, performance, teaching, and unstructured playing. So believe it or not, I think that theory, history, all of these topics are where you as an adult learner probably have an advantage over a lot of kids or younger learners. When you're first learning theory as a young child, the level of instruction that you get really depends on where you're learning, like literally which country you're from. For example, the French conservatory system has a really comprehensive theory education program. So young kids are doing theory regularly alongside their private music lessons and their ensemble classes. By the time they graduate high school, they have a very high level understanding of music theory. But in the States, on the other hand, it really depends on your teacher. Since we don't have the same type of public conservatory system, there certainly are private conservatories and pre-college programs that do offer this type of thing and graduate with the same high level of theory education. But for most of us in the States growing up, you pretty much just learn whatever your teacher has time to teach you on theory. My teacher didn't spend a lot of time on this because we only met 45 minutes to an hour every week. And any time that we were doing theory, we were not doing violin. And there was a lot of violin to work on. So how did I end up learning music theory without really having access to that sort of structured formal class? Well, like many of you, I learned through YouTube videos in my mid to late teens. That's when I started to be more interested in it. And I was lucky that by that time, there were starting to be more YouTube videos on the subject. I learned watching those and then by working through different method books, and that's exactly what I would suggest for you to do. Start by working through a method book and then supplementing with YouTube videos. I really like this format because you get the structure of the method book, you know what to learn in which order, you're not at the mercy of the YouTube algorithms, but YouTube has a huge advantage where you can actually be listening and have a visual reference for all of the theoretical concepts that are presented. You want to start with the basics, making sure you're really solid on your note reading, and then you can work up towards harmonic progressions. And then from there, there are so many directions that you can take. In addition to theory, you can start reading books on different composers and the different eras and beyond. Maybe you start with a biography of the composer of the piece that you're currently working on or by a favorite of yours, and you'll be amazed how much context this brings into your piece and how interesting it is in a way that it generally isn't for most kids. There are also a ton of amazing documentaries that you'll be able to find on YouTube or with a little bit of poking around on the internet. Growing up, I loved the series called Keeping Score by Michael Tilson Thomas with the San Francisco Symphony. That was my local symphony. And when I was older, I had the opportunity to be coached each week by some of the musicians featured on that series. So it has a special place in my heart. There are also Leonard Bernstein's Young People's Concerts, which you can find easily on YouTube. Since these are designed for young people, they are not too overwhelming. They're pretty easy to understand. And Of course, he has the entire orchestra at his disposal for illustrating examples, and it's just a nice way of learning a little bit more about music theory and history. I'll be sharing links to a couple of my favorite episodes of each of those series in this week's newsletter. So if you would like to check that out, make sure you're signed up at violinclass.co/newsletter. Nowadays, there are, of course, podcasts, YouTube channels, and other social media accounts of violinists that you can follow to get little bits of inspiration in your pocket. This can be a nice way of getting inspiration for your next piece or getting little tips here and there from other violinists. I've had several other violin podcasters featured on Violin Class before, and that would be a great place to start to check some of those, including the OMO podcast, which discusses luthry and violin making, Eric Mrugala of the Violin Podcast, which is more career focused and gives you an insider look to how different violinists organize their diverse careers. The Jazz Violin Podcast, which gives you an insight to how to best practice and learn jazz violin, and Violin Geek by Laurel Thompson, which covers a ton of different topics on teaching and learning the violin at any age. These are just the podcasters that I've personally collaborated with, and they're all wonderful people and share a lot of insight in the violin world with a perspective that's different than mine. So if you enjoy this podcast, I'm sure you'd enjoy any of theirs as well. Another thing that we train to do in music school is to be able to sing, especially for an instrument that's as lyrical as the violin. You want to have some basic grasp of controlling your voice. And when I say this, I'm not talking about being a singer and having a beautiful voice, but just being able to produce a pitch that matches what the pitch is supposed to be. So that's a really important skill when you're playing the violin, to be able to express yourself, to work on intonation. And personally, I'm not a good singer by any means. I do not have a beautiful voice, but I sing all the time because that is going to help to improve my intonation in violin, and because it's a tool that I need to be able to use with my students in lesson. This does not need to be any sort of formal, you know, sit down practice for voice. You can sing in the shower, you can sing along to the radio in the car, you can sing lullabies to your babies or to your dogs, and it's all just for fun and never with the goal to sound really good or sing in public one day. It's just a muscle that I'm continuously working on, so that tool is available for me when I'm working on my tuning, and so that my ear is always calibrated to hearing a pitch and then being able to reproduce it, whether it be on the instrument or with my voice. So next time you have the opportunity to sing, maybe it's singing along with your kids or singing along to the next song you hear when you're driving to work, do it, because it is only going to help your violin playing. It does count as practicing music, even though you're not physically practicing the violin. The next thing that you should be doing and can be doing outside of the practice room is listening to a lot of violin music. Like the other subjects, I've got a couple of episodes just on this. One is all about active listening. I will link to that episode in the show notes. And I have another one all about how to find live classical concerts, especially for those of you who are new to this world and aren't sure where to start. If you can listen to violin music every day, that is going to really help to develop your ear for intonation and for tone production. And you should do a mix between passive listening, which is music going on in the background, maybe while you're cooking dinner or while you're walking somewhere, and active listening, which is when you're going to be sitting down and doing nothing but focusing on trying to analyze it as best you can. Again, I have an episode all about this subject, so if you're new to the concept, I highly recommend you listen to it, because it's something that you can do with any level of experience from mostly anywhere. Along that vein, you should, if you can, attend live music concerts to see violinists performing in real life, both classical and non-classical. Depending on where you live, you might have access to different styles. And I think a violin is a violin no matter what style. So go out and watch as many concerts as you can. Orchestras and usually classical concerts can tend to be on the pricier side, but oftentimes you can find student or senior discounts or rush tickets for last minute shows. There are also a lot of smaller orchestras and ensembles, which generally have a lot more accessible pricing if you're on a budget. And in the summertime, at least in Montreal, they sometimes even have free outdoor pops style concerts. If you are like me and the parent of a child and can't really go out in the evenings but can't bring your kid along yet to live classical concerts, look into family concerts. Most major orchestras will do a couple of these a year, and those concerts are short and more tolerant to little noises from little people. I'm definitely looking forward to bringing my daughter to one of these for the first time this summer. It's a great activity to do with your family and to initiate your kids into the world of classical music alongside you. If you're in a city, you can even look into meetup groups if you don't have friends that share your hobby. I used to host a classical concert series back pre-COVID, and we had a meetup group that would come to all of our concerts along with a lot of other live concerts. And these were just a group of strangers that met on the internet that shared a love of classical music, and they'd go to the concert and then grab coffee and talk about it, which I think is awesome. Another really important part of immersing yourself in the violin world is performing. As an amateur violinist, you may have some ambitions of performing one day, or maybe you are already, and maybe that is a dirty word. You absolutely do not ever want to play for anyone outside of your space. And I hear you. That is a pretty common sentiment among beginner adults, and I totally understand why. But it's a really important part of improving your playing. Whatever you can do to put yourself in front of other ears and putting your playing under a little bit of pressure is going to make you a better violinist. It's going to teach you a lot of skills that you just can't learn when you're practicing by yourself. You don't need to do this in a stressful way as you would if you were training to become a professional violinist. In my studio with my private students, we meet for a studio class about once a month where we get together on Zoom and everyone will perform and then receive feedback and then go on and give feedback on everyone else's playing. Not only is this really helpful for your learning, it's a great way of connecting with other people who are in the same boat as you, who are learning the instrument and struggling with similar things that you are struggling with. I think it's really helpful to get another student's perspective, someone who maybe just figured out something that you are actively working on. If that's not an option for you, it's still really good to perform in front of others. So this can be for your spouse, for your kids, for your parents, for a friend, or even just for a pet. I'm kind of joking, but I'm not really. Even if you're just playing for your cat, it really is going to do something to improve your playing if you go in there with the mentality that this is an audience and you are performing. You're not going to stop. If you make mistakes, you're not going to interrupt anything. You're just going to play from A to Z without stopping, and you get one shot, you're going to do your very best at it. For sure, your pets aren't going to give you that same adrenaline rush that you would get from another violinist. That's generally the most adrenaline you'll get, a larger audience, or even just a loved one or a friend. But do try to seek this, even if you're just a beginner. The next category is teaching. So especially if you're a beginner, you may just assume that this does not apply to you. And I am certainly not suggesting that you go out and start teaching professionally in any capacity, but some sort of teaching or explaining of what you're doing to someone who doesn't know anything about the violin can be super beneficial in your own understanding of what you're doing. So this could be as simple as showing the next friend of yours that comes over how to hold the bow and seeing if you can explain to them where each of the fingers go, what each of them are supposed to do, and help them be able to pull a note on the string. If you have kids, this is a good one to show them, although they might struggle a little bit with the size of the instrument. But again, if you're able to explain something to a complete beginner, someone who has not the first idea how to hold the violin, it can only help your technical abilities. Another bonus is it does help you realize just how awkward the violin is to hold, and it makes you feel a little bit better about your own struggles with it sometimes, because you quickly forget how hard those first few sessions are when you have no idea how to hold the bow and how to hold the violin. So you can take pleasure at the squeaky noises that your friends and loved ones are going to make with the instrument. And lastly, as equally as important as all of these more structured things that you can do to practice is unstructured play, aka just playing for fun. So if you're taking lessons and working on classical concepts and, practicing, training your fingers, moving in a certain way, and doing all these things that require a lot of focus and thought, you want to also make sure you're making time for playing for the sake of playing without thinking about anything. So this could be just a fun project, like learning a song from a movie soundtrack that you enjoy, or just reading through a piece that you want to play someday, but you know that you don't quite have the skills to play yet, or do something that's completely different. If you mostly just practice classical violin, try learning a bluegrass tune, or try learning a melody by ear if that's something that you've never done before. Whatever sounds fun to you that you can do that brings you joy, that allows you to play without overthinking, is really something that's going to help to unwind you from whatever you've been thinking about that day, and is going to help to keep you connected to learning the instrument. Because let's face it, sometimes things are going to get frustrating in your violin practice, no matter how much experience you have. There's always going to be that next new piece that's going to be harder and challenge you in different ways. So it's important to take a step back and just enjoy the skills that you have already. Play something easy, play something fun, and just enjoy the violin. Because that's what it's all about, right? That's the reason you got into playing this instrument in the first place. You want to be able to zone out and just play through a tune for fun, enjoy the sound of your playing. And as you get into it, we really quickly get bogged down by all of these details that we need to pay attention to in order to improve. But sometimes we need to take a step back and reap the rewards of all of the hard work that we've put in. So in your next practice session, I want you to make sure that you take a little bit of time, whether it's just a couple minutes at the end, to just run through something that you enjoy playing, that you find easy, and just have fun. And that's it for this episode. I hope that I've inspired you to look into adding some of these things into your daily life. Whether you have a lot of time to practice or very little, there's always something that you can do outside of the instrument that's going to improve your playing, improve your overall musicianship, and allow you to become a more well-rounded musician. You do not need to be spending hours every single day to see progress in your violin playing. You do need to practice consistently, but there are so many other things that you can just kind of fit throughout your day, whether it be listening to music. And I cannot stress the importance of trying to add some sort of social interaction to your playing, whether it be playing for others or going to a concert with your family or some friends. All of those things are going to immerse you into the world of classical music and help you to become a better violinist. If you tried any of these things after listening to this episode, I'd love to hear about it. You can email me at violinclasspod@gmail.com. And likewise, if there's anything that I haven't mentioned that you do on a regular basis to add a little bit of violin or music into your life, I would also love to hear about it. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a minute to leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I really do appreciate that. And that is it for this episode. I will catch you guys at the next one.